From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. We've got two great guests for you today, and I think that for people who like Blessed Carlo Acutis, like I do, they'll be excited to learn about a new project from Phil Kozlowski of Voyage Comics. There's a brand new comic out from that comic company that is doing a book, Digital Disciple, Carlo Acutis and the Eucharist. And as I always like to mention, Carlo Acutis is somewhat of a patron saint for me and Miracle Hunter because of his great love of Eucharistic miracles and Marian apparitions and all things supernatural. And he applies technology to spread that word to the world. So he's my kind of guy. So I'm excited about this new comic book called Digital Disciple. And later in the show, we're going to be talking about a fascinating thing that happened a couple of years ago in Hobbs, New Mexico. We're going to be talking about a weeping statue here in the United States that had huge media attention, including being covered in the Washington Post, and was investigated by the local bishop who gave a formal declaration that there was no natural explanation for this occurrence. So we'll be talking to Ricardo Flores Castanis from Our Lady of Guadalupe Art. He was the one who actually made the statue in the first place. So we'll find out his take on this weeping statue and also his great work spreading the devotion to Our Lady of Guadalupe. And of course, I've been promoting this on my social media and otherwise. We have this new programs of Explore with the Miracle Hunter, which are airing each and every Saturday now at 6 p.m. Central Time on Saturdays on EWTN. And the new episode coming out today is Explore with the Miracle Hunter, Pont Main. Or Pontmain, as they say, something closer to that anyway in French. And so in this one, you'll travel with me to Pontmain in France, where the Virgin Mary, under the title of Our Lady of Hope, appeared to farm children and to an army, which precipitated the end of the Franco-Prussian War. And if you want more information on exactly the history of this, you can tune into last week's episode. You can find the audio archive at EWTN.com/radio. Look for Miracle Hunter. You can download a great interview with Dr. Robert Festigi, one of the top Mariologists in the United States, if not the top one, who gives a breakdown of that incredible occurrence in Pontmain in 1871. So that'll be airing tonight, and we'll be having future episodes for you as well in Bahrain, and Trey Fontana will be some of the upcoming ones, as well as in Pompeii. You'll get to see those incredible ruins of Pompeii and the miracles that happened there. And of course, we'll always be able to tune into They Might Be Saints, which airs on Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. On December 9th, we've got the episode on Father Patrick Peyton. And it's a look at the charismatic priest who pioneered the use of radio and television to bring the rosary to the world, staging massive rallies and enlisting Hollywood celebrities in his singular mission. And one of my favorite little trivia points about Father Patrick Peyton is before John Paul II, Father Peyton was seen by more people live than anybody in the history of the world. He would travel to all over the world and had huge crowds in these rallies. So he was a very well-known priest spreading his mission of the rosary. So check that one out. They Might Be Saints on December 9th about Father Patrick Peyton. And check out my new book, Science and the Miraculous, How the Catholic Church Investigates the Supernatural. It's out from Tan Books and available at EWTNRC.com. And for those people who are looking for a gift for a science-minded Catholic or somebody who's doubting the Catholic faith and is actually only grounded in science, this might be the book to bridge the gap. And so it's called Science and the Miraculous. It goes through all those rigorous investigations into things like weeping statues and stigmata and Marian apparitions and Eucharistic miracles and healing miracles like those at Lourdes. And so it goes through all the medical investigation into these things and shows how serious the Catholic Church is when it investigates these. So it's a fun book to check out, Science and the Miraculous. And you can join me on pilgrimage. We'll be actually going to some amazing places of miracles there, Marian apparitions, Eucharistic miracles, miraculous icons, and that we're going to Poland, of course, for that. So people can check it out at pilgrimages.com/miracle hunter. I'll be going April 21st through May 1st, Poland and Lithuania. And if you didn't know this, and I didn't know this, Poland is the number one Catholic pilgrimage location in the entire world, more popular than Italy in this moment. So go to pilgrimages.com/miracle hunter to find out more about that. Later in the show, we'll be looking at the 365 Days with Mary project. The Virgin of Monte Santo in Rome in Italy in the year 1659 is the devotion of the day. And the might-be saint of the day is Blessed Jan Franciszek Macha, who lived from 1914 to 1942 in Poland. He was a martyr. And the question of the week is a really interesting one. Are there other chiropoita, meaning not made from human hands, images besides the tilma and the shroud of Turin? Well, I've got a couple more ideas for you on that one, so stay tuned for the question of the week. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week where we talk about miracles that are happening all around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And so people can go to the Facebook page of The Miracle Hunter, and you can see posted every single day. We've got the latest and greatest miracles and things that are remarkable. Maybe they may not pass the standard of the Catholic Church as miracles, but they sure are interesting. Just like this story of a Thanksgiving miracle of a man rescued from the Gulf of Mexico after 32 hours after his fall from a cruise ship. So this passenger was on board the Carnival Valor cruise ship. He went missing around 2:30 in the afternoon on Wednesday, and then in a Thanksgiving miracle was hoisted out of the water, but not until Thursday evening. And he's been taken in for treatment, and his family remains there on their holiday. Very interesting. A man who fell from a cruise ship in the Gulf of Mexico has been rescued after more than 24 hours stranded in the water. And the passenger on board Cardinal Valor went missing at around 2:30 p.m. local time on Wednesday. And in Thanksgiving, a holiday miracle, he was pulled out, and he was found by the U.S. Coast Guard helicopter about 20 miles off the Southwest Pass, Louisiana, and was said to be in stable condition despite this incredible ordeal. And Matt Lupoli, who's a spokesman for the cruise operator, he told the U.S. media that the 28-year-old man had disappeared during a bathroom break, and he had been at the bar with his sister, and she alerted the crew to his absence when he did not return to his room overnight, and he was found by a U.S. Coast Guard helicopter about 20 miles off of this Southwest Pass and was said to be in stable condition. The quote was, "It took a total team effort from the Coast Guard, bystanders, the response crews, and the professional maritime partners operating in the Gulf of Mexico to locate the missing individual and get him to safety." That was the quote. "If not for the alert crew and the motor vessel, this case would have had a much more difficult ending." So absolutely amazing that he was... That this man was recovered. Perhaps it's something of a miracle. You can go to the Facebook page of The Miracle Hunter for this story and all the latest miracle stories happening all around the world. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question and give out a prize to an emailer that writes in with the fastest with the correct answer. People who know me, my friends, know that I love trivia, and you might find me at a bar playing pub trivia, but this is Catholic Pub Trivia. So last week we had the question for you. George Horton from the Dorothy Day Canonization Cause is a lay might be saint. How many lay saints from the United States have been canonized? And the answer is one. Perhaps it's zero, depending on how you classify St. Kateri Tekakwitha, the Lily of the Mohawks, as she's known. She was not a priest or a nun, and she is the only person who lived in what would become in upstate New York there, the future United States. So she wasn't a United States citizen. Of course, there was no United States at that time, but she is the only lay person from this area, at least, to have been canonized. And so we've got a number of others who are on the path to sainthood. And pick up my book, They Might Be Saints, to find out more who might be next. And so the question for this week, we're talking about Blessed Carlo Acutis, and who was the youngest American saint or blessed at the time of their death? Of course, Carlo Acutis died of leukemia, and we're talking about American saints. Carlo was an Italian saint, but who was the youngest from the United States to be an American saint or a blessed? If you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email through my website, miraclehunter.com, and answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking about Blessed Carlo Acutis with Phil Kozlowski, the author of Digital Disciple, Carlo Acutis and the Eucharist. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who tune into this program know that one of my favorite saints, maybe my patron saint, in fact, of my Miracle Hunter work is Blessed Carlo Acutis, the young saint who had a penchant for computer programming and also for miracles, which is kind of right up my alley as well. And people can go to various places around the country. Churches are now featuring his Eucharistic Miracles of the World exhibit, and people can go on the Real Presence website to see those all those images in English the presentation of the Eucharistic Miracles of the World. And it's he's always been an inspiration to me, that all that he accomplished at such a young age, and he's such a great role model, Carlo Acutis is for the world today. So we're so excited today to talk about a new project that features the life of Blessed Carlo Acutis in a new way, in a different way, in a way that perhaps is appealing to the younger crowd who Carlo Acutis is the model for already. So it makes a lot of sense to me. And we welcome to the program today Phil Kozlowski, the author of Digital Disciple, Carlo Acutis and the Eucharist. Welcome to the program today, Phil.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. And this is an exciting project. I'm so glad you're doing this, because I think it's a good way to connect with the younger audience that Carlo Acutis is the role model for anyway. So it makes perfect sense. Tell us a little bit. For most Catholics know, because of the sort of, I wouldn't call it an onslaught, but the Catholic media has really gotten the word out on Carlo Acutis. He's perhaps the most popular modern saint, we might say. He's so well covered, especially around his feast day. We see so many articles on National Catholic Register and Alatea and other places, really getting the word out on this future saint. So for those people who are living under some sort of a Catholic rock and haven't heard of this this blessed, who is Blessed Carlo Acutis?
Certainly, yeah, he's a fascinating saint, and he's really quite modern. He lived between 1991 was when he was born, and he died in 2006. And so it's not even been 20 years since his death. He led such a really an ordinary life, just a pretty much a regular teenager. He was living in Italy, and, really what's kind of fascinating about him is, he's kind of one of those modern saints who grew up with technology, like many of us are familiar with today, and grew up with the internet, and so it's really fascinating to kind of look at his life and how he encountered the world, encountered technology, and discover the beauty, in particular, of the Eucharist in this digital age.
And it's a remarkable thing, and I think it's one of the reasons that the Vatican and people around the United States are sort of, and you yourself perhaps, are promoting Carlo, because his life is absolutely remarkable, and it's unique, but we don't want it to be unique. We want him to be a good role model for young people, especially. From your understanding, how did he get to have such a understanding and love of the Eucharist?
Certainly. He does have a very interesting life, because he grew up, in an Italian family, but interestingly enough, his parents were not very active Catholics. growing up. So he, you know, I think growing up before his teenage years, they really didn't go to church very often, and were very much kind of culturally Catholic. But regardless, still live in Italy, kind of surrounded by the Catholic Church, and kind of through the influence of kind of some key priests who kind of invited the family into the parish life, he started to, you know, essentially started to ask questions. And, you know, his mother in particular, she was starting to kind of get a little frustrated because she didn't know the answers herself. You know, kind of through his questioning of the faith, the whole family kind of was brought in a deeper relationship with Christ.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I've actually spoken with his mother before, and she gives a similar recounting where she says that Carlo, in fact, inspired her faith. So it's absolutely amazing. We're talking today with Phil Kozlowski, the author of Digital Disciple, Carlo Acutis and the Eucharist, a new, brand new comic out from Voyage Comics. And the format of this book and the style of Digital Disciple is different than the other various books that have been written about Carlo Acutis. It's done in a as a comic book. And so what was your, I know that with Voyage Comics, you've done numerous comics in the past. What was your inspiration to turn your attention to this future saint, Blessed Carlo Acutis?
Certainly. So we embarked on this project along, we kind of partnered with the Augustine Institute as well. And we, you know, just saw the life of Carlo Acutis and saw just, you know, kind of a great potential with showing his story to, you know, to younger Catholics, to school-age children, and found that the comic book would be a great way to do that because you can have great visuals, and comic books in general are very popular among children, and, you know, also just for kids, they're much more likely to pick up a comic book than like a chapter novel of his life, and so it's just something very easy for them to dive into, and it's really a great kind of springboard into his life, and also, you know, Carlo himself he loved comic books too, so it just kind of worked all very, very well to portray this life of a teenager in a comic book.
Absolutely. No, I think it's an exciting outreach to young people especially. And one of the interesting things with comic books, of course, they tend to feature superheroes. Do you consider Blessed Carlo Acutis a superhero in his own way? And if not, how do you tell that story using the medium that normally portrays superheroes?
Certainly. Typically when we think of comic books, we do, you know, we think of kind of superheroes. And, you know, in a certain sense, there wasn't much about his life that was kind of extraordinary in a sense where he, you know, had any kind of extraordinary abilities like many of the saints of like levitating or things like that. So, you know, So things like that aren't necessarily kind of the focus, but the beauty of a comic book is that you can kind of still show his story visually, and you can kind of, you know, kind of show the action of his life in a way that kind of really captures your attention and kind of brings you in, and you can kind of see him kind of walk through his life And so, yeah, I mean, he is, in a certain sense, a superhero, but in a certain sense, he's not. You know, he's kind of more, he's an ordinary hero who, you know, just kind of responded generously to the supernatural grace.
Absolutely. We've been talking today with Phil Kozlowski, the author of the book, the comic book, Digital Disciple, Carlo Acutis and the Eucharist. And what's your hope for, especially for a younger audience who loves comic books and may be looking at comics in a whole new way to see such a young man of virtue being portrayed in this unique way? What's your hope for those people who pick this up?
Certainly, yeah. I think the hope with this comic and really was kind of the goal of his life as well is to bring his love and passion for the Eucharist to the world, and in particular through Eucharistic miracles. And, you know, I think that's, you know, just one of the ways where especially young people can get drawn into kind of the reality of the Eucharist as the, you know, the real presence of Christ. And yeah, I know for myself too, like as a teenager, I remember when I first learned about the Eucharistic miracles and was just so fascinated by them. And I just, you know, had a real hunger to know more about Jesus and the Eucharist. And so that's kind of what I hope to with this comic book is that, you know, both young and old can kind of see the truth behind these fascinating things that capture the imagination of Carlo, and, you know, bring more people into that, into the truth of what the Eucharist really is.
Absolutely, and I think that this is a great concept as a Christmas gift, especially the release of the comic is perfectly timed. I think that people will be interested to get this. Perhaps they have a young person in their life who they're looking to inspire to the faith or inspire to a deeper devotion in the Eucharist, and this is a great way to do that in a fun way, just in time for Christmas. What's the best way that people can connect with Voyage Comics and perhaps pick up this new comic book, Digital Disciple, Carlo Acutis and the Eucharist?
Certainly, yeah. So probably the easiest way is just to go to our website, voyagecomics.com. It's also available on the Augustine Institute's website, Catholic Market. So either of those places would be a perfect place to get that copy in time for Christmas.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Phil Kozlowski, the author of Digital Disciple, Carlo Acutis and the Eucharist, and the creator of Voyage Comics. Thanks so much, Phil, for joining us on today's program.
Yes, thanks for having me.
God bless. That was Phil Kozlowski, author of Digital Disciple, this new comic book about Blessed Carlo Acutis. And get it for the young people in your life, because I think that around this time of Christmas, this is the time of the Eucharistic revival, these 3 years. And there's no better person to focus on, especially for a younger audience, than Blessed Carlo Acutis. So check that one out, voyagecomics.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter. On EWTN, here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. So I love getting your emails, and I also love answering questions when I give presentations. So I travel around the country and give about 20 presentations a year at different Catholic parishes and conferences. And I usually speak for about 45 minutes, but at the end, people really have a lot of questions about miracles. So I love to see what people are thinking about and try to answer them. So if you'd like to have me speak at your parish, you can go to my website, go to miraclehunter.com, click on the contact tab. You can send me a message that way, and perhaps I'll be in an area near you sometime soon. And so today's question is a good one. It's pretty fascinating, this concept of a Kairopoieta images. And this is a message from Robert. He says, "Dear Miracle Hunter, are there other Kairopoieta images beside the Shroud of Turin and the Tilma of Our Lady of Guadalupe? Thank you, Robert." Well, Robert, thank you for that question. And for those people who are curious what this term Kairopoieta means, it means not made from human hands in Greek. And so there's this idea that the Shroud of Turin, which is the purported burial cloth of Christ, various people have claimed that it was made with a scorch or with painting or some other technology, but nobody's ever been able to figure out where this image has come from. And so some people consider it, myself included, to be not made from human hands. And then there's the Telma of Our Lady of Guadalupe. That's that cloak worn by St. Juan Diego during those apparitions in 1531 in Mexico, where Juan Diego has these roses placed in the tilma, as according to the story given by Our Lady of Guadalupe, and he unfurls the tilma and shows it to the bishop-elect, who looks and he sees the roses fall to the floor, but to reveal an image of Our Lady of Guadalupe imprinted on this cloth. And so these are two of these very famous cases that we might say of a Chiropoita images. But are there others? That's a question from Robert today. And there are potentially a few, and they all have their different controversies and complications, as all these things do. But when we talk about perhaps the Virgin of Coromoto in Venezuela, there's this drawing that has been said to be left over from those apparitions. Of course, it's never been validated by science, but this is something that's claimed at that location. There's also this Our Lady of Las Lajas, or Our Lady of the Flagstones, from Potosi in Colombia. And according to this story, there was a vision of the Virgin Mary and in a cave. And what was left behind was an imprint of, or a painting as it looks, of an image of Our Lady on the wall. And so in this case, to your eye, it's going to look a lot like a painting. But according to the reports from that shrine, the paint or the coloration penetrates the rock of the cave 9 feet deep, according to the reports that German scientists were the ones who were to validate this. So, again, I've never seen the research on this. However, this is claimed to be in a Chiropoita image as well. And then there's another case in Absam in Austria. And this is a case in the 1700s where there's this woman named Rosina Bucher, and she said to see a vision of the Virgin Mary when she prayed that her father would return home from a mining accident. And he came home, but in the interim, she saw the face of the Virgin Mary imprinted on some glass there. And it's interesting because the investigations tried to remove the glass the image from the glass using acid. And this was declared by the local bishop as a miracle. So without natural explanation. So you can actually see that image even today. And it's on my website, miraclehunter.com. So there are these claims of these images throughout the world. There's not many of them, these Chiropoita or not made from humans hand images. But of course, the most famous ones of all will always be the Tilma and the Shroud of Turin. So thanks so much, Robert, for your question. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send an email to my website, miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be answering a question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week where we talk about the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up exactly to that date in the calendar year. And we're talking about miraculous events, perhaps feast days, basilicas being consecrated, or other aspects of Mary that tie to that date. And we all know Guadalupe, December 12th, or Fatima, May 13th, or Lourdes, February 11th. But believe it or not, for every single day of the calendar year, there's a different Marian devotion that connects to it. So for today's date, December 3rd, we've got the Virgin of Montesanto from Rome in Italy in the year 1659. And the story goes, a tiny Carmelite church on the Piazza del Popolo in Rome, called St. Mary of the Holy Mountain, is home to a wonder-working icon of the Madonna and Child. And the painting is believed to have been created by an 11-year-old girl with divine assistance, and this was canonically crowned on December 3rd in 1659. And Cardinal Girolamo Gestalli, he decided to build the Madonna a larger sanctuary, created by three great architects. Gian Lorenzo Bernini revised Carlo Rinaldi's original plan to give the building an oval shape, more in keeping with the topography, and Carlo Fontana completed it in 1679. Pius XII dedicated the Basilica of Santa Maria in Montesanto in 1953 as the official church of artists who still come to this day before the image of the Virgin Mary seeking her help. And that is the Virgin of Montesanto in Italy in the year 1659. For more information on this fascinating devotion or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can go to my website, 365 Days with Mary, for more information on that. Let's take a look at the Might Be Saint of the Day. Every week we talk about They Might Be Saints, which connects with my television series on EWTN, which airs on Fridays at 4 p.m. Central Time, and my book of the same name, They Might Be Saints, which can be purchased at EWTN Religious Catalog, which is EWTNRC.com. And when we talk about people who might be saints, we're talking about the servants of God, the venerables, the blesseds, before they have all their miracles and they're recognized as a saint by Rome. And we're talking about from miracle workers to martyrs to those ordinary people living extraordinary lives of heroic virtue. These are the people who make us wonder if someday they might be saints. Each week, we like to present the news for people moving along the path to sainthood, going from servant of God to venerable to blessed to saint. But there have been no new decrees coming out of Rome. And so the last one came out in August, I believe. And so we're waiting for Rome to have a new consistory or perhaps even just the promulgation of decrees coming out of the Congregation for the Causes of Saints through Pope Francis. But that hasn't happened for a little while now. So I expect in the new year we'll hear about the latest people to be moving along the path. But for this week, we have no news. But people can go to theymightbesaints.com, and perhaps even better, on the Facebook page, we post the latest news as it comes out. So if you're looking to stay on top of who are going to be the next saints coming up, connect to the Facebook page, like the page, They Might Be Saints. And so on this show, every week, we present the life of one of these future saints from around the world. And there's several, there's at least one, if not several, future saints on every day of the calendar year. So for today, we have Blessed Jan Frasicek Macha from Poland, who lived in the year 1914 to 1942. And his feast day is today on December 3rd. Now, he was born on January 18th in 1914 in Czosow in Poland, and he was one of four children born to Paweł Macha and Anna Kofolka. And Jan felt a call to a priestly vocation, but was turned down by the seminary on his first application in 1933. And he studied law for a few months, but was accepted to seminary later in 1934. He was then ordained a priest of the Archdiocese of Katowice in Poland on June 25th, 1939, just a few months before the Nazi invasion. And during the war, he worked to provide material and spiritual support to families and children who had lost parents in the fighting. And he was imprisoned on September 5th, 1941, and he was moved from prison to prison, repeatedly interrogated by the service there, and he was finally executed and is now considered a martyr. And when he died by guillotine at 12:15 a.m. on December 3rd, 1942, in Katowice in Poland. His remains are unrecovered, and they were probably cremated in the Auschwitz crematorium. And he was declared venerable on November 28th, 2019 by Pope Francis in a decree of martyrdom, and he was beatified also by Pope Francis in the year 2021. And his beatification is celebrated in the Cathedral of Chrystus Kri in Katowice in Poland and is presided by Cardinal Marcello Semeraro. It seems that there are so many martyrs and saints in Poland. It's an incredible place for that. It's a breeding ground, as you might say, for holy people. And I'm so excited to be able to be traveling to Poland in April of next year. We'll be going to Poland and Lithuania, and people can join us on that pilgrimage if they go to pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter. And on that trip, we'll be going to the places of famous Marian apparitions recognized by the Church and miraculous icons like Our Lady of Częstochowa. And the two most recently occurring Eucharistic miracles in the entire world are in Poland, Sokolka and Legnica. So we'll be able to go there as well. It's absolutely amazing. And in Lithuania, we'll see Our Lady of Gate of Dawn and also Our Lady of Shaluva, the earliest European apparition ever investigated and approved by Rome. And of course, all the places of John Paul II and St. Faustina. It's going to be an absolutely amazing trip. I encourage people, if you want to join, go to pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter and join us in Poland, which is right now the number one most popular place of Catholic pilgrimage in the world, even more so than Italy. So it should be a great trip. And again, for people who are interested in tuning in to these episodes of They Might Be Saints on EWTN, those are Fridays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Central, and they're every Friday. And this week, we're going to be talking about Father Patrick Peyton. And this will be Friday, December 9th at 4 p.m. Central Time. In this episode, we're going to take a look at the charismatic priest who pioneered the use of radio and television to bring the rosary to the world, staging massive rallies and enlisting Hollywood celebrities in its singular mission. One of the things that always catches my attention related to Father Patrick Peyton is that he was seen by more people live than anybody in the history of the world until Pope John Paul II. So his travels were amazing and his impact was remarkable. And the fact that he pioneered radio and television, I always look up to him as somebody who opened the door for people who host radio shows on various Catholic networks. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking about one of the most remarkable cases of a modern weeping statue here in the United States. We are going to be talking about that weeping statue of the Virgin of Guadalupe in Hobbs, New Mexico. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who know me, my friends, know that I am a devotee of Our Lady of Guadalupe. People often ask, what's your favorite miracle in Catholic history? And of course, there are many to choose from, especially even Marian apparitions. If you go to my website, miraclehunter.com, I've got cataloged as many as 2,500 claimed visions of Mary throughout history. And so I know this stuff, but my favorite of all the Marian apparitions, considering even the highly approved ones like Lourdes and Fatima, my favorite one is always Our Lady of Guadalupe. And I was involved for many years with the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe in La Crosse, and I visited the shrine there, the Basilica in Mexico itself. So I absolutely love any time I can connect with Our Lady of Guadalupe. And one of the very interesting miracles of Guadalupe, and we did an episode or a program called Guadalupe Mysteries that aired on EWTN a year or so ago, and it's absolutely amazing that goes into some of these mysteries and marvels that relate to the Tilma of Our Lady of Guadalupe. But there was something that happened in Hobbs, New Mexico a couple years ago where there was a weeping statue there that was actually so believable that people gathered in the hundreds or thousands just to see this statue made of bronze, which wept these tears on several different occasions. And it was so interesting that the media throughout the United States covered it, including the Washington Post. And so it was absolutely remarkable. And the local bishop set up an investigation, and he actually released a formal statement saying that there was no natural explanation at all to what was happening there. So it's absolutely amazing. And we can call it a miracle, in fact. But what's so interesting is that this was a statue made of bronze, and I had the great blessing to be able to travel to Mexico and visit the bronze factory that made this statue, and got to speak with the man who was responsible for the creation of the statue and it ending up in Hobbs, New Mexico. His name is Ricardo Flores Castanis, and he's involved with a company called Made by Catholics that does amazing work on Our Lady of Guadalupe. So with the feast day just upon us coming right up, it's a great opportunity to talk with Ricardo about Our Lady of Guadalupe. Welcome back to the program, Ricardo.
Thank you, Michael. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much.
And so this was sort of a fascinating phenomena that happened in Hobbs, New Mexico a few years ago now. Of course, with COVID, we always have to add 2 years to every thing in memory. So maybe it was 4 years ago now. I can't even remember exactly. But what's remarkable is this statue made of bronze was weeping tears, witnessed by huge crowds of people, captured on iPhones and posted to YouTube, and investigated by the local bishop and his commission. They looked at the for internal ductwork. They looked for They looked for any signs of a hoax or a fraud, and there was none. And the local bishop released this statement. So it's absolutely amazing. We hear these old stories of weeping statues, but this is a very modern one. So it was exciting news. And I know that your foundry there in Mexico produced this statue. What can you tell us about this statue and how it was made?
Okay, this is a traditional foundry that we do Los White Bronze. We've been open for 60 years, and we've made thousands of statues. And this statue, Christ, I mean, I'm a devotee of Our Lady Guadalupe, of course, so, but this is my producer side, right? We have never made a statue that wept until this happened. So it's made in Los Wax bronze, it's 60 feet tall, and actually we sent it to a parish in Maryland. And there was some technical difficulty in Maryland, and they said we had to send it back, and it ended up in this little town called Hobbs, New Mexico, which is from a very, very different area of the country, right? And then it was very nice. I cannot say why she cried. I just can give you a technical opinion. It's a bronze statue made with low fat, thousands we've made, and this one came to a very, very... I would say it was very poor community where it grew. A lot of people got to saw it, so I think it's really beautiful.
Wonderful. And I know that you were interviewed by various people, and perhaps even the diocese who did the investigation to find out how the statue was made, if there was any internal duct work that created this weeping effect. What were those investigations like?
Well, investigation is analysis of the material. And then they, which is bronze, which is 90% copper, 10% antimony, zinc, like that. So they turned the statue over. They looked inside. They looked all around. They looked if there was any connection, any possible way. But I don't know if people know bronze. I mean, bronze doesn't let water go through or any liquid go through at all, right? So they also did the measuring of the alloy. They also did an analysis of the place. They interviewed a lot of people, and that's why they came to a conclusion that there was no wrongdoing at all, that it was really something unexplainable.
Amazing. We're talking today with Ricardo Flores Castanis about the weeping statue in Hobbs, New Mexico, that was produced by his bronze foundry there in Mexico. And I was there at the foundry. It's absolutely amazing to see the work that this place does. Beautiful work of on Our Lady of Guadalupe. So many statues. And as you mentioned, perhaps you've made thousands of statues over the years. And this is the only Milagrosa, the miracle worker, as they might call it there. So it's,
Yeah. The workers at the foundry actually call her La Milagrosa after what this happened. And yes, we made over about 5,000. I mean, so it's a long tradition for us. I mean, and people are, we make a lot of different kinds of statues, but actually our workers, they pray while they make these. Always.
Yeah, it's absolutely beautiful work, and we featured the work of one of the sculptor and the foundry in the television program Guadalupe Mysteries, which Ricardo was a key component in helping set up interviews and coordinate that program. So check out on EWTN Religious Catalog this program, which is available in English and Spanish on the same DVD set now on the EWTN website, Guadalupe Mysteries. It's one of my all-time favorite projects I've worked on. We got to interview the Bishop Rector and Monsignor Eduardo Chavez, who was the vice postulator for Juan Diego, top scientists, art historians. It's an amazing piece, and we're so grateful for all the help to set that up. And when we talk about your work, Ricardo, we talk about your company called Made by Catholics, which is a great place that people can go, madebycatholics.com, and they can find out all about some of the work that you do related to Our Lady of Guadalupe, which includes tilmas and also other bronze work. Tell us about the tilma that you've created and made. It's so popular. I know every person that I've given it to as a gift or shown to, everybody's just so drawn by this because it looks just like the real thing. It feels, to them at least, just like the material of the real thing. What are these tilmas made of, and how did you get it to look so such an exact duplicate of the real tilma?
Okay, when we created Made by Catholics 9 years ago, Monica, my wife, and I, we had the idea that we had to make the closest possible tilma with the closest possible textile at the original size. And we did this at a very reasonable price and a very high quality. So what we wanted to do is for people to have, I wouldn't dare to call it a replica, but a very close reproduction of the tilma, and they can, it's affordable and it's nice. And it's honest, because we don't make any photoshopping, nothing. We have actually the image with all the scars of time and all the people that have tried to harm us. So that's how we started. We took 2 years to develop it. First, we had to, we worked with the textile business, Monica and I, for a long time. So first, we had to develop a textile that looked like jute or burlap or henequen fiber, because that's why Our Lady left it as a very humble fiber. Developing the textile is a very complex thing. So we first developed the textile. Of course, we tried to do it in real jute, and it was impossible. Only Our Lady could do that. And then we developed the textile, and then we developed it. We took more than 1,000 photographs of the tilma, and we assembled an image, and then we started doing it with a technology called sublimation. And finally, it came to reality, and we're very fortunate that a lot of people have seen our work. As I repeat, it's very affordable and very nice, and it helps everybody to have an image of Our Lady, their home and their business, their school and their parish.
Absolutely. And the small size is such a nice little gift. But then the large size, the size of the actual tilma, is one that I have on my wall in my office. And it's one of my prized possessions. I really love this image of Our Lady of Guadalupe. So we're so grateful to you, Ricardo Flores Castanis, for telling us about the tilma and madebycatholics.com, which is a website which has various Guadalupe art and other Catholic art on it as well. What will people find if they go to your website, madebycatholics.com?
Well, they're going to find all the different things we do. Well, basically, it's a very easy access place where you can see it's completely open. It has my email, it has my name, it has my phone. People can call me. We also back up fundraisers with the Great Knights of Columbus all over Texas, which I'm very proud to be a knight. So the knights also sell these articles and they fundraise for their great charity. So we do everything. We work with stores, we work with websites, we work with fundraisers, we work with charities, we work with the parish. So we just take a look at Made by Catholics, and you can contact me very easily.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Ricardo Flores Castanis, for talking to us about the backstory behind that miraculous phenomena of the weeping statue in Hobbs, New Mexico. Absolutely amazing. I think it's one of the very few cases where we have the approval of a local bishop of a weeping statue here in the United States. It's truly a remarkable thing. Hobbs, New Mexico, Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish there. And we encourage people to check out madebycatholics.com to take a look at these tilmas and other art that relates to Our Lady of Guadalupe. Thank you so much, Ricardo, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate it very much. And thank you. Merry Christmas to everybody.
And upcoming feast day of Our Lady of Guadalupe to you as well. And that was Ricardo Flores Castanis from madebycatholics.com talking to us about Our Lady of Guadalupe and that remarkable miracle that was claimed there in Hobbs, New Mexico just a few years ago. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to EWTN.com/radio and check out the audio archives or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Phil Kozlowski, the author of Digital Disciple, Carlo Acutis and the Eucharist, a brand new comic book about that future saint related to the Eucharist and Eucharistic miracles. You can go to voyagecomics.com for that. And Ricardo Flores Castanis talking to us about Our Lady of Guadalupe, the miracle there in Hobbs, and also some of his beautiful artwork that's available at madebycatholics.com. And for people who want to keep up to date on Explore with the Miracle Hunter, please know it airs every Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And the brand new episode that's out this week, we've got Pont Main, which airs at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Saturday. And so I travel to Pont Main, and it's in France, of course, where the Virgin Mary, under the title of Our Lady of Hope, appeared to farm children and then to an army precipitating the end of the Franco-Prussian War. It's one of the all-time greatest examples of Marian intercession, so don't miss that one tonight about Our Lady of Pontmain. And check out my new book, Science and the Miraculous, How the Church Investigates the Supernatural. It's out by Tan Books, and it's available from EWTNRC.com. Might make a nice Christmas gift. And join me on pilgrimage. I'll be going in April 21st through May 1st. We'll be going to Poland and Lithuania. Poland is actually the number one Catholic pilgrimage site in the entire world, believe it or not, more so even than Italy. And so you can go there, pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter. And we'll be going to all these church-approved places of Marian apparitions, two of the most modern Eucharistic miracles, miraculous icons like Our Lady of Częstochowa and Our Lady Gate of Dawn. We'll be going to all the John Paul II sites and St. Faustina sites as well. Join me, pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter. And that's all the time we have for today's program. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us, and I'd like to thank you for joining me on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.